This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com. Get us wherever you get your social medias and get your podcast from, anywhere you get your podcast from, really. Apple, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud. I think we're on all of them now, finally. So, we try to make it as easy for you guys because we want to be the voice for you guys. Tonight, I have a guest in the studio with me. It's someone I've known for a while now. Came out of the Green Party with me, but moved into being the chair of South Jersey Democratic Socialists, and just wanted to welcome you here tonight, Lael Bratton.
Thank you, Heather. It's really great to be here, and thank you so much for the hospitality you've shown us.
We started off the evening with some good tacos here tonight, and now we're having a few cocktails.
Yes.
So what do you do? Yeah, we had originally come up with this idea that we were going to have, what was it, bourbon, Bolsheviks, and badass. This is what it was going to be when we had this interview. So definitely excited about that. We also have another guest in the studio who may possibly join in, or maybe won't. We'll see how the evening progresses. So we may have a surprise guest later. I'll introduce you to her if she does join in.
You guys will be in for a real treat if she does speak up.
She's a little shy tonight. So tonight what I wanted to talk about a little bit was, you've been organizing in the socialist side through the Green Party, through DSA. So that's right. You have a lot of things that you want to talk about as far as organizing in socialist communities. But first I just wanted to start off with a little bit of backstory about what was your origin story of how you became a socialist?
I hope it's interesting enough. I grew up in an apolitical household. My parents didn't really care about politics at all. I think they voted for Clinton and then Bush and then Obama, and then I don't even know if they really go to vote at all anymore because I'm not in the house anymore. But when I went to college, I ended up majoring in political science. And one of the benefits of Rutgers is that all of the stereotypes you hear about Marxist professors is true there.
Nice.
So I had quite a few Marxist professors who sort of taught me about socialism, taught me about the history of Marxism. I took a Cold War class that was heavily focused on the Russian side, saw a lot of Soviet publications and things, and they really taught me a lot. And I guess that gave me the groundwork for organizing later on. I graduated from Rutgers in 2009 and didn't really start organizing until 2017. I think, like a lot of people, I was activated by the Bernie campaign, by Trump's election, and I was an independent until I voted for Bernie in the primary in 2016. And shortly afterwards, I changed my party registration and decided to become a Green Party member. And just by chance received a postcard in the mail advertising a Green Party meeting nearby my home. So I went to that, and it was great. And I think I worked with the Green Party for about a year. I'm still a Green Party member, but most of my organizing now is done with the South Jersey DSA. And I'm currently the co-chair of that group.
Which is awesome. I really like you guys. And I would say I have some disagreements with DSA as a whole, you know, the national organization.
So would I.
But I've always said that South Jersey DSA are a great group of comrades. You guys really are. You've put together an amazing group of people that are working in South Jersey here.
Thank you. And I really think that the groups that we work with, like Revolution Radio, are fantastic in helping us get to where we are.
So what's kind of your vision of organizing in South Jersey Democratic Socialists?
It's tough because South Jersey, as our regional DSA organizer called it once, is a neoliberal hellscape. And I'm sure you can attest to that as well.
Yeah.
I think that we exist in the spaces that the other electorally focused groups don't. So we have a strong focus on working with the South Jersey Women's Center in Cherry Hill. And I know that you had Roxanne on the
show. I'll be having her on again, too, to talk about some of the terrible horrifying new legislations that are being discussed.
Right, because the Women's Center has a chapter, or branch rather, in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that some of my, our comrades who work there, including Roxanne, are really being affected by that. So a lot of our members in South Jersey DSA are involved with as escorts at the Women's Center, and it's only gotten worse as time's gone on.
Right.
I think in the last year, you know, there were days... I escort there about once a month, and there are days where nobody's there last year, but nowadays we go there and there's probably 20 people outside every on Saturday mornings. You know, they're there as early as 7 a.m. So I think that we have a very, very much a mutual aid focus on our organization. We want to help people where they are. We don't want to just get people into office like other organizations or other DSA chapters really do. We want to go into the communities that need help the most and provide for them and give them the opportunity to rise up on their own. I think that's really more important.
Right, than just getting somebody to hold a title necessarily. You're actually affecting change in your membership as well. People are coming into your membership and their lives are being changed through the education and resources that you guys provide. Absolutely. You're empowering them to take that information into their own lives for bettering their own communities. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think that's really something that we excel at in the South Jersey DSA. It's something I've been thinking about a lot. Mutual aid doesn't just mean going into other marginalized communities and helping to empower them, but you also have to empower the organization that you're in. If your group isn't functioning as a cohesive unit, you're not going to get anywhere with outside of it. Our organization really places a big emphasis on making sure that we take care of our own. And like you were saying, we've helped a lot of members. One of our members through networking, actually multiple members through our networking in the South Jersey DSA have gotten new jobs and making double their income as a result of just knowing the people here. Another person was able, through learning class consciousness within the DSA and through their own education, was able to successfully unionize their shop. And I'm really proud of them. I know that we had them and some other members out there bringing food to the picketers during the vote and really advocating for them on social media. And I'm just so proud of my group. I'm so proud of everyone in it. And I'm so happy that I was able to find this organization that does such good things for ourselves.
Right. Yeah. It's rare. It's hard to find. Was it something you specifically looked for when designing it, or was there just some luck involved?
I don't think so. I think it was really luck. I think it's, you know, you're a product of the group that you're in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I guess that's what Marx would say about any group, right? That you're a product of the group that you're in.
Right.
There wasn't any specific thing that you feel that you did when organizing the group other than just creating a good structure and groundwork that attracted people to it.
It wasn't me personally at all. I can't take any credit for that. It was our special guest sitting in the room, whom I won't name, who really built
the mystery guest.
They really built the South Jersey DSA from nothing into what it is now, and humbled to be able to take up the reigns as co-chair, and I just hope I'm doing as good of a job as they were doing, and I hope that that work will continue going forward.
Well, I think what you're doing also, like, there's a lot of, I'm going to be having somebody on the show probably in a couple of weeks to talk about this, the alienation under capitalism, where you are kind of stripped away from community and society, you know, where we go out into the suburbs and you work 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day. You have small single family units with no community anymore.
Yeah.
Community is almost frowned upon because you should be able to handle it all on your own. So that's why I think like groups like what you're doing in DSA, it was very important because you're replacing some of that community and saying, hey, that doesn't have to be taken from you. Capitalism is doing that to you.
Right. I'm a member of some of the local community groups in my town. And even there you see people worried about the, you know, a parked car on this on the road, mm-hmm. or people coming and knocking on the door to sell solar panels. You know, something as reasonably innocuous as that. And we can go into how effective selling solar panels are to individuals versus the radical change that we need to undergo. I don't need to tell you about that, Heather.
Well, let's go into that, though. I mean, you know, we wanted to have a kind of a free-flowing conversation tonight.
Yeah.
So that is another thing of capitalism, is emphasizing personal responsibility. It's your fault that we're having climate change because you're using plastic straws as an individual, not that, you know, there's 20 people that are destroying the planet. Like, we know their names. We know who they are and where they live. It's not the fault of some person who, like, forgets their reusable bag when they go to ShopRite. It's a systematic shifting of the blame from where it should be onto it's everyone's fault. We're all, you know, we're all responsible.
Right. And I definitely don't want to say, like, to the audience, you should bring canvas bags to the grocery store. You should try and abstain from using straws wherever possible. But that's not going to stop the ocean waters from rising and flooding half of the country, the world. People seem to think that it's, you know, personal responsibility. And if you put solar panels on your house, then, you know, you're doing your part to save the planet. And really, that's not going to do much of anything. It might make you feel better about yourself. It might make you feel like you're doing your part. But it's a drop of water in the ocean.
Right. The problem is so massive that I think, you know, it does feel overwhelming, especially when you feel like you have to do it all yourself. Again, that stripping of community makes you feel like, well, what do I have to do? How can I stop this? But it's not any one person. Like, it's got to be a community that we build that says, you know, we need to stop this, like, 20 people from killing us all.
So one of the initiatives that is that South Jersey DSA is involved in right now is we're working with Food and Water Watch to create a local energy economy in Collingswood. And I know that former guest Jocelyn is helping out with that. We were out there last weekend. We were out at the Collingswood Farmers Market last weekend trying to draw attention to that campaign and get people out to Food and Water Watch meetings in Collingswood, trying to get them to the commissioner's meetings to show that there really is a mandate to do that sort of thing.
So what would something like that look like?
From my understanding of it, I'm not a Collingswood resident, but our members who are Collingswood residents have explained to me, is that Collingswood would purchase the energy in bulk, and residents of the town would opt in to that energy. And then that energy would come from renewable resources. Obviously, the more people that are involved in that, the cheaper that becomes for residents. It basically would eliminate your electric bill and shift that towards the town. And I know that right now they're working on a focus in Collingswood, but really we want that to be a regional and even a statewide focus. There's 9 million people in New Jersey that we could switch to renewable energy tomorrow, mm-hmm. and we're just not doing it.
Right.
So having that, you know, having, instead of individuals walking down the street trying to sell you solar panels, the community should be going to their municipal meetings, their council meetings, and saying, we want solar panels that all of us can use, not just the homeowners, not just the people who own property. We all need energy. We all need electricity, and we don't want it to come from nuclear plants. We don't want it to come from coal and natural gas. We want it to come from We want it to come from renewable resources, and that's should be the focus. That's what we're doing, and that's what we need to be doing everywhere.
And do you think something like this would be a good step towards, I mean, I'm assuming your goals are probably in line with mine, that ultimately it should just be a commodity for the community. Like, there should just be energy generation that no one should be profiting off it, for you know.
When I explain to lay people about my political beliefs, it's always, I don't think that anything that people need should be a commodity. I don't think that people should have to pay for food. I don't think that people should have to pay for housing. I don't think that people should have to pay for energy.
So is this like, you're thinking of this as a possibly really good step towards transitioning to where energy is just part of the commons?
If we can decommodify energy, I think absolutely that's a good first step towards, you know, okay, well, your energy is being accounted for. How about your housing?
Right.
How about your food? You know, we all need those things. We can't go without them. And
So when you're talking to the layperson, like you just said, how do you usually approach that? Like, this is, you know, something I like to ask other organizers of, you know, do you try to, I guess, you know, earlier we were having dinner and my husband was like, oh, when I'm talking to my boss, I don't mention the word socialism, but I just try to like sneak around the side and say, you know, well, this is the situation, like, you know, workers and, the, you know, their labor value taken away from the workers. So what, how do you do when you're talking to people? Does it change from group to group or?
Yeah, there's some, I guess you can call it code switching involved in that. Cis male coworkers need a little more pushing than those of other genders or upbringings, I would say. But I think, you know, just as an example, I think that my coworker recently, he's, I wouldn't call him argumentative, but he definitely likes to debate me on different topics, and he knows my politics. So we're having a discussion recently about our company and what the future of it would be, and I sort of made a joke like, "Well, when we're all worker owners, that won't be a problem anymore." And he kind of stopped for a second and he looked at me and he was like, do you think that's something we can do? And I was like, yeah, of course. You know, let me pull out my, you know, my IWW literature and show it to you, right? So, you know, in that case, that person has definitely come around and seen things from a more collectivist point of view.
Well, I think this is, and I guess this is also something Marx addresses, that frequently when we're talking about socialism, we talk about, well, it's just right, you know, it's about a moral right, it's about equality. But I mean, there's a lot of scientific stuff built into a Marxist analysis of the economy that almost like just the fact that it's right is the least of the discussion, that just that, you know, we are in this contradiction between the capitalists, you know, trying to take value away of the surplus value created by the labor. And that's always going to be a battle. Just, it's a natural, I mean, it just makes sense, you know, yeah. Naturally.
I don't think you even need to call that Marxism or socialism in order to get the point across to a lot of people. People who work in their jobs every day and are having their wages stolen by their bosses. People who have to drive to work every day and sit in traffic for 2 hours and wonder why the roads are so terrible and why they can't just take a train to their job.
Right.
I think that those are the sort of places where you can go with, you know, the general public to express those opinions that things can be better. Things don't have to be the way that they are. And we can make that world happen, but it's not going to come, the change isn't going to come from above. It's going to come from us.
Right. And that almost trying to give a philosophy lecture to someone is the least, I mean, obviously it's right, you know, like we all know in our heart an equitable, fair, just society is better. Yeah. But, you know, like people can really relate to this. I think that that's important to them to understand that what we're talking about is happening to them currently. Yeah. It's not some philosophical ideal. Like people create a lot of value with their labor, and you have to, or else you starve. Right. You don't even have a choice. It's not optional.
There's a wonderful quote that I heard recently at a talk that I went to. It was the leader of one of the nurses unions at Temple University, and I'm blanking on her name, but this union leader at Temple Hospital had a quote when Temple Hospital went on strike. They said, a union is great, or a strike is great because there's no other circumstance where your boss shows exactly what he thinks of you.
That's great.
Yeah. And it was just such a powerful message and such a poignant thing to say. Whether you're on strike or not, your boss thinks you're a piece of shit.
Right. Well, I mean, they don't even call, what is it now? Human resources is the department of, like, you know, managing staff. Like it's another resource to be exploited.
Human resources only exist to protect the company. Human resources do not exist to protect you. And anyone who's gotten fired from their job can tell you that human resources only exist to protect your boss and your executives.
But it just says it right there on the title. You're a resource. You're like,
you're a commodity. You
know, yeah, you're just something there that's generating profit. You're, you know, less important than, like, the heater, you know?
You are equivalent to the heater. You are the something that makes the company make more money.
Uh-huh.
And if the heater didn't need to exist by law, it wouldn't even exist.
Right. So, going back to your community organizing a little bit more.
Sure.
So, when you're talking to people about this kind of stuff, and, you know, would you say most people are fairly receptive to this when you're talking about it?
It's tough. I think that a lot of people, and our most direct contact is at the farmers markets or the fairs or things where people are just walking around and show up at our table. So, they already have something to say to us. They already have a preconceived notion of what we are and what we do. Because we have a big banner that says socialist on the on the back of it. So they have something to say, and I think they're surprised when we are pretty down to earth about things, that we're not just, like, you know, waving red books in their faces. And we want to talk to them how they are. I think a lot of people in Camden County, where I live, are more electorally focused. Last year we were getting a lot of people asking about Andy Kim running for Congress. And has anyone heard the name Andy Kim since January of this year? Does anyone know what Andy Kim is doing? I can tell you that he isn't an advocate for Medicare for all, so
right.
His progressive bona fides are already broken than that.
I'm pretty sure he was very honest about that even during campaigning, if he didn't support it then as well. People seem to think he was going to somehow magically change, but if you don't say you support something, you probably don't support that thing.
Right.
You know, this is a little hint for anyone who's, when you're trying to decide who to vote for. If you say, well, I think this person probably agrees with me,
right.
They probably don't.
I think people are generally want to hear what we have to say because they're genuinely interested in what we have to say. But I think that it's unlikely that they're ready to just, like, come on board. And
they're not going to quite join in just yet.
Right. And even that, you know, you see that within the DSA. DSA had a lot of people join after Ocasio-Cortez won her primary back in June of last year. And we have people, when we send out emails, who reply back to us and say, don't use the word comrade in your email. We have enough places to go without using that word or alienating more people.
Anyone that wants to call me a comrade, you're welcome to, because I think of it more as a compliment. Comrade is not a word that should be alienating people. A comrade is someone you have great respect for, usually, is
comrade,
what that means.
Comrade is the perfect gender-neutral term.
It is.
For somebody that you're involved with in the struggle.
Uh-huh. Because we are all struggling together, even if you don't quite see it yet. You're in the struggle. Whether you know it or not, you are struggling.
Even if you're not, if you don't call yourself a comrade, you're a comrade.
Right.
If you're listening to this, you're a comrade.
Right. I am pretty sure there are not a lot of capitalists listening to my show. If you currently own the means of production and you're listening, well, awesome. That's great.
Hopefully we could teach you something today.
But you're probably not you. So if you don't own the means of production, congratulations. You're one of us. You're part of this. Congratulations, or I'm sorry. Either one
right.
works.
You're probably being screwed over by your boss. You're probably being screwed over by your landlord. You're probably being screwed over by your government. Sorry.
Probably. I think definitely.
Definitely. Sorry. We're doing the best we can. And get in touch with me if you feel like you're in over your head.
And I mean, I think more and more people, like I've talking to just college professors, people are feeling a real existential sense of dread and terror at the future. I mean, the future is not looking bright. And I think that that's, we're in this moment where pretty much it's going to become drastically alter society or be like, eh, okay, humanity had a good run.
Right. there's a really good quote that I heard once, I think is actually in the Age of Rage movie that Daryl Lamont Jenkins was involved in. At the end of it, they had a quote from Matt Chrisman from Chapo Trap House, who said, when it comes, you know, we're facing an ecological crisis, and everybody knows that it's coming. Whether you deny climate change or not, you know it's coming. And your choices are one of two things. You can either recognize that it's a problem and work collectively to solve it, or you can realize that it's a problem and do everything you can to maintain that power and eliminate anyone who is a drain on that power. It's literally socialism or barbarism. It's fascist, eco-fascism or eco-socialism.
Right. Those are kind of, we're at the point where those are our only options. And groups like DSA, groups like the Green Party, you know, I can't, there's so many groups, I can't even think of them all off the top of my head, but there's so many great cooperative and partnering organizations we know of that we all ultimately know we have to work together to change society. And we've got to figure it out, you know?
It doesn't matter whether you're a Bernie-crat or an anarchist or a Marxist-Leninist or a Bundist. It's all about, we're all socialists. You don't even have to be a socialist, honestly, Heather. we're all in the struggle together. We're all
right. Even if you don't like the word socialism, you understand. I think part of you has to know that it's got to be a community power to change what we're doing, and we have to change or die.
Absolutely.
So that was kind of a downer. The conversation just took a bit there. Let's try to bring it back up before we close it out for today. Sure. What's been your biggest success with DSA? The thing you're most proud of?
I would definitely say that the organizing we've done within our own organization has really been the most important thing that we've done. What we talked about earlier. I've made personal friends with DSA. I've made comrades with DSA. I've made so many connections through DSA that have made me feel like a better future is possible. There's only maybe 15 or 20 people who are really involved in the South Jersey chapter, but there's 56,000 members nationwide who are DSA dues-paying members. There's thousands more who aren't dues paying the DSA and working in other socialist organizations. And there's millions more who believe that a better world is possible, but aren't doing the work to get there. Or maybe they feel like they are, and it's just not going their way yet. They're going to get there too.
So I think you know the question that's coming next, because I know you listen to the show quite often. Would you call yourself an optimist?
It's a tough question.
You know it's coming. You've heard tons of people answer.
You have to be, and that's the quote, right? Is it Le Guin or Gramsci? I think it was Gramsci who said, "Pessimism of intellect, optimism of will." We know that things are bleak. We know that climate change is a problem. We know that the fascists are rising, but we also know that when push comes to shove, we're going to look out for each other. Our communities are going to work together. We're going to make connections where we need to make connections and make sure that everybody takes care of each other. And no matter what forces come in our way, I think that the people will win. So
yes, you're an optimist, and I'm glad to have you here.
I am so happy
to have you here. Well, I think it's about time to wrap it up. I see we've passed a little bit over the 30-minute mark now. So I just want to thank you again, A, for all the work that you're doing, B, for being a comrade, and C, for joining me here tonight.
Thank you for being a comrade, Heather. And I'm so grateful for the work that you're doing here and everyone else on NJRR.
to my listeners, we're immensely grateful for you. We would not be here if it were not for you guys. We're here to be the voice of the activist community. And without the activist community, it would just be Brian and I. I don't know what we'd be talking about. We'd just be probably high and talking about, I don't know, music or something.
Which isn't the worst thing.
Which is, no, it's not the worst thing. But, you know, we are here for a purpose. We are here to help elevate and no one would cover the activist community. We could not get media coverage for even really cool things we were doing. So that's why we designed this company, so that activists have a place to get covered now. And without you guys, we wouldn't be here. We take no corporate money here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. We are entirely sponsored by donations from our listeners, from activists, or from ACT partnering organizations. If you'd like to donate and help us stay on the air, you can go under our website, www.njrevolutionradio.com. Click on that donate button. You can be a monthly sustainer on Patreon, or just do a one-time donation through PayPal. And if you're an organization that's aligned with what we're trying to do here, talk to us. We have a great partnering organization program, and you can be a part of it. To my listeners, thank you so much for joining us. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.